With us on the line, we have the Taoiseach Minister for Enterprise, Leo Varadkar. Minister, good morning to you and thanks for joining us in the programme.
Good morning and thanks for having me.
Now, you were in Kerry last week. Obviously, you're pretty busy at the moment. I know you've been writing in the papers recently about meeting people on the ground to assess their needs ahead of Budget 2023. I'm not expecting you to announce the budget this morning, but what can you tell us about how this is going to be targeted, particularly dealing with the cost of living issues that we're facing?
Well, first of all, it was great to spend the day, spend Friday in Kerry. It's been a while since I've done a proper visit in my official capacity as opposed to my personal capacity, and visited the airport and met with the management there. Glad to see the Dublin-Kerry flight is going well and numbers are picking up again, and we had a good conversation about what we can do to support the airport. Went on to the Kerry Technology Park, where, as you know, the IDA is going to build a new, what they call an advanced building solution, with a view to getting a further major investment into Kerry, because Kerry's been doing great in terms of Enterprise Ireland jobs, you know, jobs that are created by Irish companies that export abroad, but I don't think it's got its fair share of IDA multinational investments, so keen to work on that and have some good news for the county in terms of a big investment in the next year or two. Spent a bit of time at Castlemaine, obviously. Couldn't miss that. I was with the TLI Group too as well, you know, a Kerry company that's doing really well and going global itself. And was in Fitzgerald Stadium as well, which I hadn't been for a long time. I was there for a Munster final a long time ago, but I got a tour of the stadium, and clearly a stadium that needs major investment. And I'm going to keep in touch with the county board about that and help in any way I can, because a premium sporting and tourist county like Kerry needs a good stadium. And it was just surprising to see the poor condition it's in, and definitely needs government investment. And then finally just met with some members and business people to talk about tourism and the budget and so on, and very much you know, the kind of message that I'm getting really all around the country is that people are very worried about the bills they're seeing, particularly prices at the pumps, particularly electricity and gas bills, but also groceries. A lot of people are afraid about what's coming in the winter, and I think the main thing we have to do in the budget is to put money back in people's pockets to reduce some of the costs that we have some control over, and really restore confidence again that people can spend and that they'll be able to get through the winter and will be cushioned from the effect really of these rising prices, which are not controlled by us. It's an international inflation crisis, but we do have the resources as a government to help people out, and that's
so how will you be putting that money in people's pockets? You'll be talking credits, but also on electricity bills, but also you're looking particularly at wanting to change income tax.
Yeah, it's a combination of things. If you think about it, any household budget has three elements. There's the amount of money you get paid, whether it's from work or your pension. There is our carer's allowance or other payments. There's how much you get to keep after tax, and then there's how far does the money go. So we want to help with all three areas. Certainly on pay, you'll know there's an increase of 7.6% in the minimum wage. We have a deal done with public servants, which hasn't been ratified yet, but would result in a 6.5% pay rise. And other areas like childcare workers, for example, where we control pay, we'll be increasing it. Same applies, of course, to the pension and you know, weekly welfare rates for carers, people with disabilities and so on. So that's the more pay element, if you like. The second element, which would be particularly relevant for working people, is reducing income taxes. And we'll be finalising probably over the weekend an income tax package, which fundamentally means that you're able to keep more of the money that you earned. And Ireland is unusual among Western countries in that people on average and even below average incomes pay the highest rate of income tax. And that's not fair, because, you know, you get a promotion, you get an increment, you get a pay rise, you do some overtime, you lose half it in income tax and USC and PRSI. And we can't fix that in one budget, but we'll try and make another step forward.
Is now really
one.
The time to be targeting tax cuts in the situation that we're in at the moment, at a time when our services need so much investment? Colm Henry, the Chief Clinical Officer at HSE, was speaking this morning, and he made the point about the underinvestment in the community side of our health service, the lack of step-down facilities, the beds in the community that would free up acute beds in our hospitals, which would then go some way to tackle the long waiting lists in our emergency department. That you know, you can cut taxes all you want, but if you don't put money into services, people will be hit on the other side of it, having to pay more and having to wait longer for proper services.
Well, they wanted to pay more because, you know, among the things we'll be doing is bringing
They'll have to go private. If they're afraid of their health service and afraid of the waits, they'll be forced to pay more for their private health care. That's the point, that they won't trust the services that they're getting, so they'll go private for things like that.
Yeah, I get your point. It's not an either-or, you know, thankfully, because our economy is very strong, you know, because we've more people at work than ever before. We have a budget surplus, so we can use some money to help with the bills and help with tax cuts and other money for services. So just to give you a rough idea, we're talking about a budget package next year of 6.7 billion, I think it is. One of that is going into tax reductions. Five of that is going into spending and public services and infrastructure. So, you know, it's a 5-to-1 split in favour of higher public spending over income tax reduction. But also I'd make the point, you know, and I'm a foreign minister for health, money doesn't always solve the problem. You know, when it comes to home care, for example, we're unable to spend the budget because we can't get the staff because they're probably not paid enough. And that's where increased pay and lower taxes can help. You know, we find it very hard to recruit consultants. They're much better paid, pay much lower taxes in Canada, America. Britain, for example, has to have regard to that too. And also, you know, the health budget has gone up from, I think, 14 billion back when I was Minister for Health to 22 now. More money doesn't always solve the problem. And I think that's something we need to pay a lot of attention to as well. Yes, the health service needs more resources, absolutely, has more money, has more staff, doesn't always result in better outcomes. And that's something I think we have to have regard to as well.
Okay, can I ask you, as this issue has come through on the programme over the last couple of weeks, particularly from some of our local representatives, both from Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, and one of our listeners gets in touch and touches on it this morning, I would like to ask the Taoiseach that, why have the government left Irish citizens down by filling the majority of accommodation that our students and children need for college with Ukrainians? Now, I know a number of refugees were moved out of the student accommodation to allow for it, but the wider sense of the taking up of places in general by the number of refugees that we're taking in. Some of our representatives, including one from Fianna Fáil, Norman Moriarty, very critical of the numbers being put in with no services alongside it. Now, I know it's an emergency, but people are being put in rural Kerry where there's no buses, GPs are under pressure, you can't get a dentist. How is that going to work for the winter?
Yeah, well, just to say, you know, that there were a lot of Ukrainians in student accommodation over the summer period. A lot of them had to move out, you know, to make way for students because student accommodation is for students. Now, there might be some exceptions to that, but generally speaking, that they've had to move out and go elsewhere. But, you know, I have to be very frank that there's a war on, a war in Europe, the likes of which we haven't seen in generations. 5 million Ukrainians have been displaced from their country. 1% of those, 50,000, have made their way to Ireland, and we're doing our best to accommodate them as best we can. And it's far from ideal. It's far from perfect. It is B&Bs. It is hotels. It is any accommodation that we can find. And in some cases, it's you know, it's tented accommodation, which nobody wants to be putting anyone in. But this is a real refugee crisis, the likes of which I don't think we've ever seen in Ireland. But we can't turn people away. You know, first of all, we couldn't anyway without leaving the European Union, and we're not going to do that, or leaving the United Nations, because we have obligations under international law and European law. But even if we decided to, you know, become North Korea or a country like that and turn people away, you know, it wouldn't be the right thing to do, in my view. It wouldn't be Christian. It wouldn't be the kind of people
sure.
we are.
Sure. What do you say to those, though, who are concerned moving people out from student accommodation and putting them in guest houses and hotels, particularly in rural areas, about the small and the medium enterprises that depend on people to come and stay in those hotels in the normal course of events? The displacement factor that will be there for restaurants, boutiques and other businesses who won't be getting the same sort of business, or may not, because there won't be any rooms or not enough rooms left for tourists.
Well, first of all, to say I understand that concern, and, you know, that was raised with me when I was in Kerry on Friday. I think over the winter period, when, you know, tourism numbers are low anyway, it will actually bring some business into some small towns and villages. But certainly when the tourist season resumes, you would much prefer to have those guest houses and hotels full of tourists who will spend money in restaurants, go to local attractions and do all of those things. But I would also bear in mind that a large number of the Ukrainians who've come to Ireland are now working already, and they're working in retail and hospitality in lots of different areas where businesses struggle to get staff at the moment. So, you know, there's a number of things going on. I absolutely accept that it's not an ideal situation to be in. But I don't know what people would have us do otherwise. You know, we can't really send people back or say to, you know, Poland that is 2 million Ukrainians, you know, it's your problem. We want solidarity with you.
We are up there among the highest in Europe for the per capita. But we're up there among the highest in Europe per capita what we've done.
No. If you take it in raw numbers, and if you take
per capita, I'm talking about per capita.
Yeah,
according to Eurostat
figures. We'd be in the lower half of the top 10. You know, we wouldn't even be in the top 5, you know, per capita. So, like I say, 5 million people, 1% of them have come to Ireland. Ireland has 2% of Europe's population. So, yes, it is big numbers, but we're not, you know, we're just about in the top 10 per capita. So it's not that we're taking a disproportionate.
Is it being made worse, though, by the fact that we already have a housing crisis? That's why we're getting this pinch point and people are feeling that we can't do as much as we are doing?
I think we're going to do as much as we can. I don't think there's any limit to the compassion of Irish people when it comes to accepting people who are fleeing war in Ukraine. Capacity is limited. That's the truth of it. And, you know, I think one of the reasons why the numbers coming in has started to slow is there is an awareness that that in Ireland accommodation is limited. And, you know, we're starting to see a small number of people return now to Ukraine, given that at least it would appear at the moment that Ukraine is winning that war. But the most important thing I think we can do is to continue to support Ukraine. This is a war where they're fighting for us too. Let's not forget, if Putin succeeds in Ukraine, he's not going to give up there. We need to draw a line in the sand. It took Western leaders too long to do that in the 1930s and 1940s. We know how that ended.
And we have
to draw a line in the sand now.
We all need to do our part. Okay, stay with me on the line. We're going to talk a bit more, one or two other issues to get to with the Taoiseach Leo Varadkar after we take these. The KP views, comments and opinions coming into us. We're speaking with the Taoiseach Minister for Enterprise, Leo Varadkar, on the line. And Minister, you've been writing in the Irish Examiner in recent days about a number of things, but including the setup of the Shannon Estuary Economic Task Force to examine the potential for that region for the economic development and job creation in areas like wind, hydrogen, natural gas storage and solar. I believe the Shannon region could become a powerhouse for wind, hydrogen and solar energy generation. Now, I'm not going to go into the what's and wherefores of Shannon LNG and New Fortress Energy. It's being decided by Imbor Panala and we'll see there where that goes. But that's fine to say, make that point that it'll become a powerhouse. But at the moment, Wind Energy Ireland are saying the only port capable of building turbines for offshore is in Belfast. A recent report commissioned by that same organisation warned without acceleration of EirGrid's plan for grid improvements, our target for generating 80% of Ireland's electricity renewables by 2030 will simply not be realised. I'll give you one example of a company we spoke to recently, Mainstream Renewables, who had applied for a survey licence just to survey the waters off North Kerry and Clare for the potential for an offshore wind farm, a huge one, which would bring jobs to the area. They applied in April. It's now September. They're still waiting for that licence. We're not moving fast enough, are we? Our system doesn't seem to be able to cater for what needs to happen in the time that you're saying it needs to happen by.
I think we've done very well on onshore wind. About 40% of our electricity now is generated from wind, and that's been because of all the investment in onshore wind in recent years. But we've probably gone as far as we can go on that, so we need to now go offshore. We do have plans to invest in our ports. There's a huge investment happening at the moment in Rosslare, adjustment reserve, and that's going to be as good if not better than Belfast when it comes to the offshore wind farms, and that'll be important for the Irish Sea. We'll need to do some investments on the west coast as well. Possibly Foynes will be the site for that, and we've a new body called MARA, which is going to be the licensing body for offshore development, and that
still hasn't been set up though at a time when companies are looking for licenses, and it's been talked about for the last number of years.
It'll be set up within months, I'd say.
Okay, but given the crisis that we're in, the emergency we're in, either we're in an emergency or we're not. We've been on to Kerry County Council about Fianna, perhaps maybe could be a very good port for servicing, not for building because of the size of it, for servicing, but you're talking about renewing the or reinforcing the piers, developing it, infrastructure that may take a couple of years. There doesn't seem to be any sense of urgency on their behalf or on the government's behalf to get these things up and running, is my point. If the future is going to be so great... And notwithstanding, people in North Kerry have been waiting a long time on the promise of these type of jobs.
I could definitely think FINET has a role to play when it comes to the maintenance of the wind farms. What you need for construction is something much bigger, because if you think about what one of those offshore turbines looks like, it's huge, and you have to be able to lie it flat before you put it up, and that's probably where FINET comes in. Now, the truth is the priority up until now has been onshore, and we've been very successful when it comes to onshore wind. Now it's a move towards other things, solar in some cases, and then also offshore. And we've plans and we've investment coming to make sure that happens. And there's big opportunities there, you know, particularly along the west coast to have offshore wind, and also to have hydrogen as well, which is one of the fuels of the future. We're going to need natural gas for a long time, 20-30 years in my view, but the future after that's going to be hydrogen, right? And big opportunities, I think, there.
Okay, and are you then saying will it be publicly supplied and stored gas, as is said by the Energy Security Review during the week?
Yeah, like I have an open mind on that. I'm glad that the Energy Security Review says that we do need gas storage, because at the moment we're relying on the UK interconnector. There's two of them. There's never been a problem with that, by the way, but the United Kingdom is not the country it used to be, and it's no longer in the European Union. I think it'd be useful to have another way to get gas into the country and to store it. So I'm glad that that is recommended by the review. I don't think it necessarily has to be state owned. I do think it should be state controlled, you know, because if we've got a gas store that it belongs to a private company and we've no control over whatsoever, it mightn't be that good to us. But NORA, for example, is the agency that stores our oil for us, and we've about 3 months of oil storage, and they will sometimes engage in contracts with private companies. So, you know, I don't see why you couldn't have the government sign a contract with a private company that knows how to do these things and would store the gas for us. That might be a lot quicker, actually, than us trying to do it on our own. So I don't think it has to be in the ownership of the state necessarily, but I do think we need some control over it. You know, if you think of anything you store, like what would a grain store be to you if you didn't have any right to use the store?
And finally, briefly, because there are some who are saying that the report spells the death knell for any private company getting involved in gas storage or bringing in LNG to this country. You would disagree on that point?
No, that's a view being expressed, I think, by the Friends of the Environment and others. That would not be my view. Ultimately, if we're going to do gas storage and if we're going to find another way to bring gas into the country by sea, the sensible thing to me would be to talk to the people who actually know how to do this, and not to have the government to try and do it from scratch without the expertise and capital. So, you know, my interpretation of the report would be different, that we're going to need to talk to the private sector and people who know how to do this and find out what the best place to do it is and how we can finance it and do it relatively quickly.
Okay, Minister for Enterprise and Taoiseach Eilidh Fraker, thanks for joining us on the programme this morning.
Thank you.